Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
Happy Friday. It's time to look back at the last 7 days and make sense of the biggest local and statewide stories. I'm Lisa Labas in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset's Weekly News Recap.
I am running for governor in 2026 to protect our story.
Governor Pritzker just announced his re-election campaign.
It's unclear who will run alongside him. His current lieutenant governor, Juliana Stratton, is running for U.S. Senate.
They've got to be somebody who can do the job when they, you know, if something happens and they had to take over.
Also, some speculation as to whether he could run for president in 2028.
I'm running for governor of Illinois. I want to be governor of Illinois. That's four more years.
To dive deep into these headlines and more, we had a panel of three local journalists, Monica Eng, Chicago reporter for Axios, Block Club Chicago reporter Mac Lederman, and Cindy Hernandez, Chicago Sun-Times general assignment reporter. And we kicked things off with J.B. Pritzker making his campaign for a third term official. Was anybody surprised by this announcement? Here's Cindy.
Honestly, no.
No?
I think a lot of people saw this coming, but I don't know, not very surprised at all.
Not
basically
so much.
The worst kept secret in Illinois. Every newspaper had, we know it's going to happen, closest source to the governor, you know, closest to the governor have already leaked it to everyone. So by the time Thursday came, it was almost like a non-issue.
Right, yeah.
But some questions do remain.
Oh, they do. And we'll get into that. Mac, were you surprised at all?
I mean, when you're as popular as J.B. Pritzker is in the state of Illinois, why wouldn't you run again, Lisa? I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer for him.
You?
I know he has national ambitions, but it seems like he's trying to play both lanes at the same time.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that, Monica. Unlike politicians who are already saying they're going to run for Dick Durbin's almost vacant Senate seat, Pritzker can run for re-election next year and then run for president in 2028, yeah?
That's correct. And so that's why there are so many questions and so many different pieces on this political chessboard that are moving around. Dick Durbin's out. Chukowski's out. Who's going to move in there? Who's going to lose their congressional seat or other seats because they're doing it? Juliana Stratton running for Senate and Durbin's seat. So who's he going to, you know, who's JB going to choose as his running mate?
Yep.
If he runs as president, doesn't win, then does he come back or does that, you know, it's just so much moving around. And, you know, he's not doing a lot to dispel his presidential ambitions. I think they've been clear for years now. But it's, you know, sort of like, okay, great. You're running for governor. We all knew that. But what next?
Right, right. And he launched his reelection video, but he really didn't make any mention of Republican opposition in that video that came out on Wednesday. Instead, he talked about opposition from President Trump. Let's hear a little bit from the clip.
We don't just talk about problems. In Illinois, we solve them because we know government ought to stand up for working families and be a force for good, not a weapon of revenge. Donald Trump's made clear he'll stop at nothing to get his way. I'm not about to stand by and let him tear down all we're building in Illinois.
All right, so Cindy and Mac, what do you think about Pritzker's focus on Donald Trump? Do you think this is spurring more speculation about Pritzker's presidential ambitions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's been avoiding questions about whether he will serve a complete full third term. So I think that also leaves, you know, room for questions.
All right. Well, okay, let's get into it. Let's talk about this possible running mate thing. We've got Juliana Stratton running for Dick Durbin's seat, so she can't run, as Monica mentioned. You know, are you surprised, Mac, that the governor didn't name anyone as a running mate yet?
Not quite yet. I think he's going to have his choice of people. I think a lot of people would like their name attached to J.B. Pritzker. I think he's strategically positioning Julia Stratton in a more important position, looking to fill that seat that Dick Durbin is vacating. But at the same time, I think, you know, Pritzker is walking into this reelection campaign in a much different world in Democratic Party than it was even a week ago, Lisa. So I think he has very stable ground in the fertile soil of Illinois, but the winds are really shifting around him. We seem someone more like, you know, Governor Gavin Newsom really get that viral dig and moment against Donald Trump. And I think Pritzker is really trying for that, as is the mayor of Chicago. You know, he's called Trump an authoritarian, a fascist clown car, a fascist freak show.
Hey, he made a lot of pointed comments in his State of the State address, too, earlier this year.
He's trying out all these different lines, and I just feel like he hasn't really had that one moment stick yet, you know? So I think he's safe where he is right now, but especially when we have someone emerging like the mayoral candidate in New York, Zohran Mamdani, who's pushing the Democratic Party potentially more to the left and has already picked, I'd say, a high-profile fight with Trump. It seems like Pritzker has fallen a little bit more to the wayside on the national level.
Yeah, Cindy, what do you think about possibly picking a new running mate for Pritzker?
I don't know. I totally agree with what Mac's saying, so I don't know. I think we'll just have to wait and see.
A bunch of names that are already being floated. Ana Valencia, city clerk. Susana Mendoza, comptroller. Michael Frericks, treasurer. Alexei Janulius. A lot of people saw maybe he wants to run for mayor. So, but would he take lieutenant governor with the possibility that he's going to be governor?
Right. I mean, are we talking, this is like the Illinois version of Succession, sort of. You know, like, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? You know, which child am I leaving this
Except
to?
They're not all related, Lisa.
Right. Well, you know. Yeah, I guess so. Okay, so the primary would be March next year. Can any of you think of any other Democrats who might enter this race?
Against JB to primary?
Oh, yeah, right.
That's a really good question. I mean, he runs the Democratic Party in Illinois. It would kind of be suicide to do it, but, you know, anything could happen.
I think the Juliana Stratton race is going to be a good referendum on J.B. Pritzker's power. If he can, you know, put money into her campaign and easily sweep her away into Dick Durbin's seat, I think that would be another sign that, you know, he really can't be toppled right now, especially when you're sitting on the giant bags of money J.B. Pritzker is. I can't imagine someone making a serious challenge for him right now.
All right, let's move on a little bit. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul has joined yet another lawsuit against the Trump administration, and this one is over federal government withholding billions of dollars in funding that already had been approved for states and other grantees. And Monica, I know you had reported on how these White House actions are impacting farmers in Illinois. Tell us about that.
Well, so, gosh, there have been so many flip-flops, it's hard to keep track. I actually wrote a story about how the Trump administration was telling ICE, hey, lay off on restaurants, meatpacking, agriculture, and hospitality workers, because basically it will collapse our food economy if you keep taking everybody who's undocumented out of here. One federal report said about 40% of all farm workers are undocumented. So he told ICE, hey, cool it. You know, someone who owns hotels and golf courses, he said, cool it. And then at midnight, after I'd already turned to my story and covered the Beard Awards, I got an alert. Holy cow, they flip up again. They are going to raid farms and restaurants. But then again, last Friday, he said again, oh, well, we can't hurt farmers because they're the ones who keep us fat and happy, quote unquote. So farmers and the Farm Bureau, you know, usually very conservative groups are saying, hey, man, you got to go through with this. But when I called to the Department of Homeland Security, they're like, well, we haven't quite changed our thing yet. What we know is that no violent, illegal people, they said, are safe in America. Mm-hmm. So it's very uncertain. And in an economy, in a time when they are getting, they're planting, they're tending their crops, they're weeding, they need to have some certainty over their labor force. And it's just driving them nuts. And groups that have normally been very conservative are saying, hey, you got to help us.
All right. And I know these federal announcements and pronouncements are affecting universities here in Chicago, too. And Mac and Monica, I know Northwestern is a big place that's important to both of you. And it also is being impacted by these federal funding cuts. Can you fill us in on this, Mac?
Yeah. First, I'll say Monica was my professor at Northwestern.
What?
I'd say, was it 5 years ago at this point? It's been a long time.
It's why he's so talented to begin with.
Well, lots of money spent at Northwestern. Thank you, Monica. I'd say you personally were worth every single penny.
Oh,
but these colleges and universities are under trying times, which we know very much well. Northwestern, you know, probably one of our most prestigious institutions here in the Chicagoland area, is facing a near $800 million federal funding freeze. We're also seeing Trump's attacks on places like Harvard, limiting their ability to potentially enroll international students, which a lot of these major universities rely on to balance their budget every year. So Northwestern has finally at the point where they have to face the music of their financial crisis, which is crazy to me, given how many people, how much people pay to go to school at these places every right. single year, the type of financial trouble they claim to be in. And they told staff in an email that they are planning to freeze hiring, change their insurance plans, and among other cost-cutting measures that include limiting tuition for employees at the school. So I got to say, a lot of people seem to not be very happy about it.
Yeah, staff kind of said, well, why aren't you asking before you're telling us, you know?
Yeah, there was no collaboration, I think, especially non-tenured professors, which are many professors at universities. I think now the vast majority of professors that work at universities are non-tenured. They're at the subject of the winds of this, that they could be fired or laid off or other measures very soon.
Wow. Okay. And I know Columbia College this week announcing it's cutting faculty as well. Cindy, tell us details on that.
Yes. They announced that they have laid off 20 full-time faculty members as part of their planned cuts to academic programs. 18 of those who were laid off were actually tenured faculty members. They were part of schools of audio and music, businesses and entrepreneurship, communication and culture, design, and visual arts. School officials said that many of the layoffs focused on staff that provided general education. And school officials also said that now the school has updated its graduation requirements to give students more flexibility to take additional courses in their majors and minors. And, you know, those tenured faculty members who are leaving Columbia will receive a year of pay and benefits, while the others who were on a teaching track faculty were offered 6 months of pay and benefits. So.
Yeah. But now this is not the only time Columbia has been in the news in the past, what, year or so. I know that they had to cut a bunch of courses. What do you think is going on there? This is a tough time for students as well.
Yes. So the school is actually trying right now to plug a $38 million budget deficit that they have, which was brought on by just a drop in enrollment. The school has seen a drop in enrollment from more than 11,000 in 2010 to less than 7,000 in 2022. Mm. So it's been an ongoing thing. The layoffs, 70 staff members were laid off in May last year. And then this past September, the school cut 18 majors that they said were underperforming. So it's just been one thing after the next with them. But next month, in just a few days or weeks, Shante Bolton will take over as president of the school, and she will replace Kwangwoo Kim, who resigned last year because of a 6-week strike and declining enrollment. So
I this kind of feels like a sort of a death spiral a little bit, and it doesn't feel like it's instilling much confidence for students. No. I mean, would I want to enroll in Columbia if I think like, oh, they just keep cutting classes and teachers, is my major safe, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what do you think about that, Mac?
I just think ever since I've, you know, left Monica's class and become a journalist in Chicago, it feels like the city is broke, the state is broke, all our colleges and universities take turns being broke. This is just kind of a constant problem we keep running into.
Right. It seems like it could be a domino effect on lower application rates in future years. Monica, do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, Columbia College has been a funnel, Medill as well, but Columbia College has been a funnel for Chicago's journalism world. Our colleague Justin Kaufman graduated from there for so long, and working journalists have often taught there. And it's just such a shame to see such an august institution just keep spiraling. Yeah, it's sort of like a self-defeating circle.
We saw record-breaking temperatures throughout the Midwest and East Coast over the last week. Cindy, how did Chicago manage this dangerous heat?
Personally, I stayed inside.
Good for you.
I don't think I left my house this past weekend unless it was, you know, super, I really, really had to. I stayed cool along with my kitty cats. But the rest of Chicago, I think, also did well. I think most people opted to stay indoors, but our beaches were flooded also with people So just trying to keep cool.
Yeah. Heading to the lakefront. A lot of people, I would assume most people have air conditioning in Chicago, but I don't think everybody. What did you find?
No. Since 2018, the city has seen 38 heat-related deaths, but heat-related deaths are actually on the decline, but still neighborhoods typically on the west and south sides have higher reported heat incidents, so a lot of things happening on those neighborhoods with just people who don't have access to air conditioning. Areas like Inglewood or other majority black neighborhoods are usually hit the hardest during these heat waves.
So. What does the city do for people who don't have air conditioning? I mean, they've got cooling centers open, but they're not open right now, I don't think. So what do you think the city's doing enough to help people who need the help?
Well, they do have cooling centers, but some people have complained that they should be 24/7. Mm-hmm. You know, when people go home, then what do they do if they can't cool down at night? And they, you know, OEMC puts out a thing, you know, drink lots of water, check out the cooling center, jump in the lake. But without 24/7 cooling, you know, people do argue that it's incomplete.
Right, right. And I know, Cindy, your reporting found that certain areas of the city are harder hit by the heat. Tell us about that.
Well, I guess it's just, I think the city needs to do better about giving those people access to places where they can go during these situations, because like we said, those cooling centers, they're really open only during business hours. So whenever that business closes, then that's about it. And people don't really know what to do after. So
right. And we're not talking about just people in general lacking air conditioning. I know it's been an issue in hospitals. Mac, you found some, you did some reporting on that?
Yeah, we did. On our last point, I think Lisa, the South and West Sides, there's been studies that pretty much they're degrees hotter than other parts of the city when these heat waves come through. I think that largely has to do with the lack of tree cover and more cement, unfortunately. But yeah, hospitals, temperatures in hospitals have also been a problem. There's these safety net hospitals, which are these privately owned, deeply state-subsidized hospitals that are meant to serve South and West Side low-income communities. They're supposed to remove barriers of entry for people who don't have health insurance and need care. But we reported this week, my colleague Charles Frush specifically reported this week, that Weiss Hospital had its people there move to another hospital, West Suburban Hospital.
Oh, after, and that's in Oak Park, yeah?
In Oak Park, yeah.
Okay.
So from uptown to Oak Park, they were moved due to near 90-degree temperatures inside these safety net hospitals. And when they moved them to the other hospital, which confused a lot of the people who had to be moved,
sure,
the heat was just as bad. Charles actually went there and he felt the beads of sweat going down his face too. One of the women advocates there had a thermometer inside that read 88 degrees in this new hospital that they moved all these patients to across the city. And these are people who are vulnerable, that they, a lot of them unfortunately don't have strong advocates like the ones featured in our story. And I think these safety net hospitals, they've changed hands a number of times. They've been fostering corruption, as we've seen with Loretto Hospital, related to the COVID vaccine and who got them. I know nurses have had trouble picketing these safety net hospitals, seeing that there's cost-cutting measures left and right that's not leaving them safe in emergency rooms. So these hospitals that are meant to serve the most vulnerable are seeming to do the opposite of that, and we have people staying in rooms of near 90-degree heat.
And it was Weiss Hospital?
Yes.
Yeah, Weiss Hospital. Okay. And so was Block Club able to do any follow-up reporting on what happened after these patients were transferred to Oak Park? Did they have to stay there? Did they move somewhere else that was more comfortable?
I'd like to say this is the power of local journalism, but I believe that a branch of West Suburban Hospital where they were moved to was cleared out, and there was ad spot cooling, and people were moved to other rooms. But I think this is going to perpetually be a problem, unfortunately, until people speak up.
All right.
Yay, okay. Local journalism.
Yeah, local journalism. That's awesome. But I know it's going to stay hot now for the next, this weekend, the next week or so. And Reset earlier in the week talked with Illinois State climatologist Trent Ford. Here's what he had to say about all the heat we're seeing.
You know, honestly, this is the kind of heat wave that I sort of keeps me up at night. You know, every once in a while in July or August, we'll get some really eye-popping actual temperatures where the temperature itself will get up close to 100 degrees. In this case, our temperatures are, yeah, they're hot, but they're not all that impressive, 92, 93, 94 degrees. So could lull some folks into a false sense of security saying, yeah, it's in the low 90s, that's okay. But when you combine that with humidity, with dew point temperatures in the upper 70s, that's where you're really talking about some really dangerous heat. And so folks really need to take precaution here.
All right. And that's where we're talking about going to the beach. I know, you know, North Avenue Beach was just like packed with all kinds of people. There was not much sand to find a space out there. You know, stay hydrated, all those things. And as I mentioned, it's going to stay hot. It could hit the 90s in the city and some suburbs on Sunday. So everyone take Trent's words to heart and keep safe. Now, Lake Michigan is, of course, where a lot of people go when it gets hot. And Mac, I know you reported on some concerns about the lake levels on Lake Michigan.
So Madison Saavedra, our Edgewater reporter, was hearing chatter in the neighborhood about how everyone was excited that Osterman Beach is now connected to Lane Beach right next to it because the lake levels have lowered. And this is a cyclical trend that researchers aren't exactly sure why this is happening, but between 2015 and 2020, the lake levels rose about 5 to 6 inches. And now ever since May 2022, around now, they've lowered again 3.5 inches. And a lot of people are celebrating this. Homeowners in South Shore say that their homes are not being battered by the waves as much as they were. And years past, over around where Madison lives and reports, pretty much there's a new nature preserve that appeared as the water dropped between beaches on Osterman Beach. So a lot of people are excited. There's more room to lay out your towel out there over there now. And I think the people at North Ave would appreciate that too.
Yeah. And Monica, I know you spend a lot of time at the lakefront. What have you seen?
I do. You know, about 5 years ago at WBZ, I was reporting on these record high, you know, lake levels that were splashing over the ledges. And I have all these videos of it, you know, basically drowning me out as I'm riding my bike along the lake. And then 2 days ago, I went and it's a 4 foot drop before you can get to the water. It's crazy. And I kind of prefer it higher, but I love that there's more room on the beach for people. There are a lot of beaches, let's say in Michigan City, that just disappeared during that time. And so,
Yeah, we used to go to a place in South Haven and they had zero beach.
Yeah.
You know, were like, you know, inches, literally inches. And they had to build like a platform up on the bluff. It was really kind of wild. So
now it just swings back.
Yeah. Cyclical is where it is. So I know that maybe you know someone with a boat. Do you know? I don't know anyone with a boat.
I wish I did.
Please introduce me.
I know, right?
Hopefully they're listening, Lisa. Yeah.
Dan, well, we'd be happy to take a little ride. But that's another great thing to do on a hot day. But boating comes with a little bit of risk. You need to be safe. And I know, Mac, every summer we hear about accidents involving boats and people. This summer, of course, no different.
Yeah, every year I've been a journalist, I've written our story about X, Y, and Z being broke. The other story I've been writing about pretty much every summer, and that's the start of every summer particularly, is someone getting hurt or seriously injured or dying near the playpen by Navy Pier,
right?
Where a lot, this big popular party cove where lots of boats come to congregate and drink. And we see this past weekend that there were 7 rescue missions and over 20 distress calls answered by the Chicago Fire Department. And that included a series of very serious incidents in which a local celebrity hairstylist died after falling into the water. Another man near Navy Pier in the playpen was pulled out of the water, appearing to be dead already. And a third man lost his foot trying to move from one boat to another near the playpen. So just a series of accidents. I think what I heard from first responders is that just intense heat wave really rushed a lot of people to the water all at once. And the amount of distress calls you usually see in mid-August we're seeing right now.
Yeah. And so we're hearing that the heat is earlier now, and now, you know, boating accidents and mishaps is coming earlier as well.
And the current was shaky and strong this past weekend.
Oh, so be careful, please, please. We have been covering the lack of affordable housing and rising rents in Chicago, and the city council had tried to tackle this through an anti-gentrification housing ordinance, but this is running into obstacles. And Mac, you did some reporting on this. Remind us about the details of this ordinance, and then we'll get to the latest news. So recap the ordinance.
So my colleague Ariel Perella Arelli has been covering this. She's our Northwest Side reporter. And this anti-gentrification ordinance covers a part of town that's faced a substantial displacement and rising property costs in the last 5 to 10 years. That includes Logan Square, Humboldt Park, Avondale, Westtown, parts of Westtown. And this ordinance was intended to help people stay in their homes. So among many things that it requires is that if a homeowner is looking to sell their home, that they have to give the tenant first right of refusal to buy it. And the tenant will have to go to create a union amongst the people who live there and find a lending partner. And this process, Lisa, it takes a lot of time.
I was just going to say that it seems like it's creating a lot more work.
Yeah. So these homeowners are frustrated, apparently, according to two aldermen, Felix Cardona and Gil Villegas, who are asking to remove their wards from the pilot program. They say that these homeowners, they can't sell their homes as fast as they would to maybe a ready-made developer who has the pockets and the know-how how to buy their properties pretty much right away. They're saying that the free markets cannot move if you do not allow these people to sell their homes and get the wealth that requires. But, you know, there's still pushback, and this program is still relatively new. The right of first refusal clause in this only kicked in March. So it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, tenants will actually be cobbling together and buying their homes. I haven't heard any reports of that
yet. Okay, so that's why some of the aldermen want out. Monica, now, your home, it's your biggest asset typically, you know, and it's understandable that homeowners might oppose this. Have you been looking into that at all?
I wish I could say
that's
I
okay.
have.
That's all right. That's all right. So community organizers, they have worked for years on getting the Northwest Side Preservation Ordinance passed, but it does seem like Chicago Alders could have anticipated this opposition. Do you think that they could have anticipated that opposition, Mac?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I just think it's so early in the pilot program, it's yet to tell the actual results of this. It's interesting that they're deciding already to come out publicly against this, but I guess they're hearing from homeowners who are ready to sell their homes now. And it makes sense why they're willing to sell their homes now, Lisa, as the property over there is increasingly valuable.
Yeah. What do you think the next steps are? Is the city council going to just like, put the brakes on this at all, or just keep barreling through with it?
To be determined. I'll be at City Hall, though, to report back to you guys on it. We'll see how it plays out.
Excellent. Turning to some other stories, let's talk about Crystal Rivera. I know hundreds of mourners gathered this week for the funeral of Crystal Rivera, Chicago police officer. And Cindy, this is such a tragedy. Remind us how Officer Rivera died.
Yeah, it's a super just sad what happened. So on June 5th, Crystal Rivera, who was assigned to the Gresham District Tactical Team, her and her partner were chasing an armed man. They chased the man into an apartment building in Gresham. Once inside, they encountered another man who was armed with an AR-style rifle. The man pointed the gun at the officers while the other man jumped over a couch and ran out of the apartment. So Rivera and her partner chased the man down the hallway, and that is when her partner unintentionally shot her in the back. She died. They did, take her to the hospital, but then they ran into issues with the squad car that ended up catching fire on the way there. So then they had to wait for another squad car to move her to and take her to the hospital. But ultimately, you know, she ended up dying. So,
and her funeral was Wednesday, I believe. And you were there? You saw it?
I was at the visitation on Tuesday, and the funeral was on Wednesday. At the visitation Tuesday, you know, hundreds of people showed up. We were there the majority of the afternoon, and, you know, you just saw officers from all over coming just to pay their respects. You know, there was officers from Hanover Park, Illinois State Troopers, officers all the way from Milwaukee who came. There was, you know, family, friends, and as well as the next day as well at the funeral.
Yeah, how were people remembering Crystal Rivera?
You know, no one had anything but positive things to say about her. They all said, you know, she loved being a mom first and foremost. That was always her main priority. They said she was a kind, just loving person. And she will be missed for sure. Mm-hmm.
And in some other police-related news, Monica, the family of a woman killed during a police chase has filed a lawsuit against the city of Chicago. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this police chase happened last November in Washington Park when Karen Henry was in a vehicle and it collided into a CTA bus. The family says that the police did not request or receive permission to engage in the chase. And they, you know, and they, in their testimony, you know, remembered her as vibrant and productive. They said she had recently completed an MBA and that this was a, you know, an unnecessary loss of life. And they want the police to examine, you know, what the rules of engagement are when they engage in a police chase.
Right. So the family's saying it was just... They had disregard for other people, you know, they prioritized their chase over people's safety.
Yeah, if they used common sense to prioritize the safety of people in the community, it never would have happened.
All right. And we just want to mention quickly another tragic accident in Gary, Indiana on Wednesday night when five people were killed. This happened on a South Shore Line train. It collided with an SUV that reportedly had driven around the railroad crossing barriers, and the identities of the people in the SUV have not been released, I don't think, but I had read that they were all the same family, lived in the same house, and were in their 20s. So I guess rail safety is something we'll be taking a look at. Any thoughts on that?
Just super sad to hear. I think I read something about they might have been on their way home. So it's just extremely sad.
It's tough. Yep. And sticking with the heat for a little bit, last week's high temperatures may have triggered a wave of overdoses. Cindy, you looked into that. What did you find?
Yes. On Monday, the Chicago Department of Public Health announced that there were 60 opioid overdoses that were reported from Friday to Saturday. And more than 37 of those were Saturday alone. So that ended up triggering the city's spike alert system. And the system basically tracks how many overdoses are reported based on EMS calls. So they have kind of like a color system, you know, yellow, orange, red. Mm-hmm. And when the city hits the red, that means there's more than 37 overdoses within 24 hours. And then once that is triggered, then, you know, the city and their community partners will sort of send out resources to those areas that have the surges. You know, they'll pass out Narcan, they'll, you know, canvas with information on overdoses, or, you know, they'll offer help to those who are ready to take it as well.
Yeah, I was really curious reading your article. How do experts kind of equate the heat to overdoses? How are those linked?
Well, the way they explained it to me is basically most overdoses end up happening outdoors. You know, typically in the winter, they're very not reported as often just because people aren't, you know, going out and, you know, they're staying inside. And in the heat, it tends to kind of brings up those overdoses. So they think that the heat wave may have just, you know, led to just a more than typical what would be. Yeah.
All right. So. And so I know that coming up, we've got the NASCAR street race, and the heat even caused some pavement to buckle in the Grant Park area. And that led to street closures earlier this week than the city had planned for NASCAR setup. Tell us what happened.
Well, the heat, like, I'm not the only one schwitzing here. It was the it was the street, too. So Columbus between Jackson and Roosevelt and Balboa between Michigan and Columbus closed Wednesday early so that they could cut it off and get CDOT in there to fix those streets that need to be pristine for the NASCAR race.
Oh, those fancy, expensive cars, man. You know, so is that interesting that the city can get something fixed super quick?
Yeah, I need to get NASCAR in my neighborhood.
No, I know, right? Yeah, if it were running through any of our neighborhoods, we would get our streets fixed really fast. So it's July 5th and 6th. Are any of you going? Are you interested in this? Mac, are you interested?
I cannot afford tickets, but I do think on television, it actually looks really cool the way these cars jet past each other with the view of the city skyline in the back.
Sure, yeah.
I think a popular opinion on this has really shifted more towards NASCAR, at least from what I see. I know there was a lot of disdain for how long it's closing Grant Park and places around it. And my colleague Melody Mercado, our downtown reporter, was reporting about how it was canceling softball leagues, these giant mega events that seem to be at the park from the beginning of summer to the end of summer, be it Lollapalooza or NASCAR.
Had to move.
Yeah, it's really a question of like who Chicago is for. But I guess personally, I think the NASCAR race has, for most people, has been kind of a big hit.
Yeah. Are you interested in going to the race or watching it, Monica?
A big N and an O.
Big N and an O.
No, I did watch a little on TV and it was sort of cool.
I watched the year it rained the whole time. Yeah, I was stuck in my house anyway, so I thought, I guess that's interesting. You know, fine. Any interest on your radar there, Cindy?
No. That is not for me.
Okay, so we have a divided panel. That's fine. But let's talk about another sports story of the week. It involves some unsportsmanlike conduct at a White Sox game. Monica, tell us what happened when the White Sox were playing the Arizona Diamondbacks on Tuesday.
Yeah, it was really just terrible behavior. Second baseman Ketel Marte was heckled by a fan, a Sox fan, who decided to start making fun of him for his mother's death, his mother who died in a car accident in the Dominican Republic in 2017, until, you know, he actually broke down emotionally. And so he has been banned not just from Comiskey, and I still call it Comiskey, but from all MLB parks for this terrible behavior. I mean, you know, you could say, oh, hey, better, but I mean, really? Talking about a mom's death? Come on.
Yeah, that's a little low.
Yeah.
A little low. And he's been banned from all stadiums. But let's talk about some happier, positive news about the White Sox. I know, Mac, you talked about something called the Savannah Bananas.
Have you heard of them, Lisa?
I don't think so.
Okay.
You
I don't know.
Watch.
I should watch.
They're a little hard to explain, but this is this barnstorming traveling baseball league that's gone absolutely viral for pretty much taking the old stodgy rules of baseball and flipping them on their head. So I think the best way to explain this is through the rule changes played under what they call banana ball. The first one is the game can't be longer than 2 hours. Obviously, many people think baseball is notoriously slow, and I'll say it, boring. Boring is the word they use when they say about baseball.
No, my friend, no. All right.
I'm saying tell you what other people say about it. But
okay.
You can't bunt. If you bunt, it's an immediate ejection. There are no walks. Walks have been replaced by sprints. So pretty much when a batter takes ball four, they have to run around the bases, and you can take as many bases as you want. And the other team can't tag you out until all 9 fielding players have touched the ball.
What banana ball? This is bananas. What else? So is the group is coming to Comiskey Park, right? and what happens? Is this during a game?
So there, this is all a part of the game. Behind all the gimmicks, and there's dances, choreographed dance breaks, stuff like that. They're kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters in a way.
Okay.
I think is the best comparison. But behind that, these guys are actually playing a real baseball game. These are former minor league players who maybe had a cup of tea in Major League Baseball or played high level college baseball. Like, the quality of the product is also good, and the games are genuinely competitive. And I will say my favorite rule about banana ball, Lisa,
yes,
is that if a fan catches a foul ball on a fly, it's an out.
Oh,
all
we
right.
We gotta do this, you know.
Bartman.
Mac and I play against each other in the Media League softball, and I think we should just switch to banana ball.
Banana rules?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's fair.
Everyone is so, you know, rejuvenated by banana ball that they sold out Sox Park 2 times over for games in August. So August 15th and August 16th, there's not going to be a single empty seat in the house to see these guys play one of their traveling teams. And as you know, the White Sox, Lisa, they don't really sell games out that much anymore.
They need a little help, so they're getting help from the Savannah Bananas. Good for them. All right. So Pride Parade, though, Sunday, I know it's going to be super hot. And last weekend, Saturday, about 250 people gathered in the Loop at Federal Plaza. This was to show support for trans rights. Monica, tell us a little more about that rally.
Yeah, the rally featured Daniel Biss, the Evanston mayor, and Representative Kelly Cassidy, just going out there to support trans youth at a time when they are under attack. As you probably know, there was a Supreme Court decision about limiting trans care for minors,
right,
in Tennessee, but also the shuttering of the suicide hotline for LGBTQ youth at a national level. And, 46% of trans youth have considered suicide in the last year. And so it just seems, I don't have an opinion. I'm not allowed to have an opinion. But well, that seems sort of irresponsible. But Illinois, it wanted to say, since the Supreme Court is leaving it up to states, hey, we here care about trans youth, and even if other states are not going to offer care, and this can be something as basic as gender-affirming care, using the pronouns that people want to use, puberty blockers, things like that. But we're saying that Illinois is a state that does still offer this care.
All right. Now, Cindy, we do have a bit of an update on a 30-year-old woman who drove into a crowd of anti-deportation protesters a couple of weeks ago in the Loop. Tell us a little bit about Deidre Kemp. What is she charged with?
Yes, she is facing charges for aggravated reckless driving, causing bodily harm, aggravated fleeing, causing bodily injury, and driving on a suspended license. I was actually there. I witnessed when the moment that she drove into
same
the crowd.
Same thing. I saw her multiple times. Yes. She was heckling people, actually, out of her car for a long time before.
Yeah, she was heckling the police officers. So at that moment is when the crowd started gathering in that area, passing through. She ended up basically getting stuck between police vehicles. So officers were trying to direct her away from the crowd, but she, because she'd been heckling officers this entire time, she basically ended up ignoring their directions, and she drove immediately into the crowd. I lost sight of her, but I did see one police officer follow her, chase her down, trying to, you know, grab the steering wheel, you know, to get her to pull over. The officer ended up losing his balance and knocked into a 66-year-old woman who ended up with a broken arm. And we ended up finding out that the Deidre Kemp actually had 3 children in the car with her at the time of you know, driving into the crowd. So it's pretty reckless, I believe.
All right. So a story we'll be keeping a little bit of an eye on there. All right. Let's talk about the Bloomingdale Trail 606. Visitors have a new dining option. Phyllis and Monica?
Yeah. Wolf and Company has got a store, a cafe, a bar, and a restaurant that's 2 levels. And you can eat. It's the first patio that where you watch all the joggers and the bikers on the Bloomingdale Trail. And the food is pretty darn good.
Is it? Although, do they really have a $24 cheeseburger? Did I read that
right? They do. And that does sound expensive, but it's a delicious cheeseburger.
How delicious? Like,
well,
is it
super juicy, you know, perfectly soft bun. Those who've been to Little Bad Wolf know this is the same burger, same company.
Okay.
And they really do a great job. And free service berries. You just walk out of the patio onto the trail, and there are all these beautiful service berry trees, and you can pull a bunch of berries and jam them in your mouth if you're like me.
Okay. And I guess there's a scary themed business coming to Chicago,
right.
Monica?
Universal Destinations and Experiences announced they're going to take an old Tribune distribution building on 700 West Grand, I believe, across from the Future Bally's, and turn it into Horror Unleashed. And it's going to have, you know, they're going to have 400 jobs, they say, for people who want to be entertainers, scare actors, makeup artists, and merchandise hosts.
Uh-huh.
They say it's going to bring $1 billion of economic impact. We'll see if that's true. They got $7.2 million in economic incentives from the state. And we're going to have a Horror Unleashed here in Chicago.
All right. Matt, go ahead.
I just don't, like, maybe this is a hot take, but I don't understand why you would pay to be scared.
Some people love
those
that.
Those haunted houses people go
yeah,
to.
Yeah, some people love that.
I'm already scared enough.
Yes,
with
me too.
On the world.
I'm with you, but some people, yeah, they really dig that. But Mac, let's talk about one last good news story. Our power couple, C-Rocket and Imani, they're at it again. And what's the latest on our lovable little piping plovers?
So let's back up there a second, Lisa, because I think the lore here is very important. If I get this wrong, Block Club readers will absolutely come for me.
I have the T-shirt.
Oh,
that, you know, Chicago is for lovers. So.
Yeah, and I got the poster on my wall back home. But pretty much, so piping plovers, this endangered species of very little cute birds, had not nested in Chicago in over 5 decades until Monty and Rose showed up.
Monty and Rose.
And Monty and Rose are no longer with us, unfortunately, but they left us with Imani. And Imani had been coming to Montrose Beach, where people have set up a little preservation area for these birds to hopefully nest. It's very important. You can't go there. You can't, as popular as Montrose Beach is, you can't actually set up your beach towel over there. So Imani was looking for a mate, and he found one in C-Rocket. And last summer, they had a a plove of chicks, and only one of them survived, a piping plover named Nagomi, I believe.
I think so. Yeah, yeah, that sounds right.
If I'm wrong, it's
over
for me.
That's pretty close, but now, but they're back, and they have some newly hatched chicks.
And they have three new hatched chicks out of four eggs they laid, and that's a major breakthrough, Lisa, because less than or around a third of these piping plover eggs actually survive. So to have three out of four, that's a pretty good number.
And what I feel like we need to have a little piping plover cam and just make sure all the chicks are doing well.
They do. They have that. The preservation organizers.
I didn't know there was a cam. Okay.
Well, they're taking videos of these chicks and posting them everywhere.
Okay. All right. I'm talking live cam. Live 24/7. Yeah.
I think there's an audience for that.
All day, every day.
Set up a trail cam.
Excellent. Yes, excellent. Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank Monica Eng of Axios, Block Club Chicago's Mac Lederman, and Cindy Hernandez of the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Lisa. You too.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guthman. It was edited by Meha Ahmad and mixed by Ethan Schwab. And every Friday, Reset brings you the news you need to know in under an hour. But if you want a few updates throughout the week, sign up for our newsletter. It comes out Mondays and Fridays. You can subscribe at wbez.org/reset. I'm Lisa Labus in for Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening. We'll meet again soon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.